Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Inside the Football Business with Neil Stratton and Justin Van Volpen as we talk about the business of the game of football. So a lot of stuff going on. Pro Days is kind of the height of the day here in regards to this time of year. Obviously, we had the NFL Combine. Free agency's kind of waned down. It's the Pro Days. We're about 5 weeks away from the NFL draft, and then we get to start it all over again, Neil. So how's everything going with you?
Yeah, so far so good, Justin. Like you said, it's kind of a busy time, a lot of things going on, so the excitement continues.
For sure, for sure. And I think something that, you know, I mean, we've talked about a lot in the show. We kind of talked about it when we were both down at the NFL Combine, and that was the 3% rule as far as in regards to the NFL agents keeping their agent commission at a top level of 3%, being able to bill that, you know, at 3%, obviously the players can negotiate that down, and many agents, you know, might not even charge 3%. But the opportunity to charge 3% was something that the NFLPA was trying to or had discussed, you know, moving it down to 2%. And basically after, you know, going to the NFLPA meeting, you know, that Friday at the Combine, you know, that Thursday at the Combine, you know, with the passionate speeches, they're going on over an hour past, you know, the time limit there. You know, obviously the NFL PA was there in Maui and decided here on Saturday, it kind of came out from Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk that, hey, that they were going to decide to not reject that offer, but just table it for another year. So, you know, as far as something that, and I think that's what people have got to understand, it's, they just tabled it. They said, okay, hey, now what does that mean? Is it something that is going to, you know, resurface again? Is it something where, you know, the NFLPA can hold it over the agents' heads? I think there's a lot of, you know, maybe things that, you know, people don't really realize maybe behind the scenes that could be going on there. But what was your take when you kind of heard the news that, hey, you know, it was going to, you know, stay at 3% for another year and they tabled that discussion there?
Well, I think, you know, maybe the initial reaction when I heard that they tabled it was that maybe it gives the Moore Smith another year to kind of get tutored on what actually is on a standard representation agreement. Obviously, a lot of people that attended the meeting in Indianapolis seemed to indicate that it looked like he didn't know that you could mark 3%, 2%, 1% on the deal. And so, you know, I'm only kidding there, but my understanding is that they're going to go at this kind of a different way and maybe try to coach players that will be draft eligible on their ability to be able to move it down and maybe renew that, I guess, in their minds, or at least introduce it more effectively. Now, how they go about that, kind of anybody's guess. I don't know if they can reach out to players en masse and kind of say, hey, look, you need to understand you don't have to sign for 3% or whatever. And that seems a little dumb and maybe a little misguided, but perhaps that is their strategy. I don't know. I mean, I tend to be a little cynical. I guess anyone who listens to this podcast already knows that. But my guess is that they wanted to kind of – this has become such a hot-button issue, and there was so much pushback from the agents, and obviously it became a very touchy issue at the Combine, that maybe the powers that be in the NFLPA kind of said, hey, guys, let's step back from this for a year and allow this to maybe get a little bit less tricky and hairy and have – a little less attention, and then maybe we can come back and do this again without so much fanfare. So, as you mentioned, tabled is the operative word here. And so I don't think it's gone away. I just think it's been delayed. Again, I don't mean to be cynical. I hope that that's not the case. But it's hard not to look at it that way. And still, yeah, I mean, after all, I think there are a lot of powerful players. Apparently Richard Sherman is one of them, who's really still driving the bus on this and really interested in moving down to 2%. And I don't know. I mean, as we all know, the rookie deal is rather cut and dried. And so I guess maybe that first deal you can make that argument, and we've discussed that in previous podcasts. But at the same time, if you're going to look at training and you're going to look at a number of the other things that have become an expected part of every new agent's job, then I don't know, the margins just aren't there. And I guess I could see where if players do start to come back and say, we only want to pay 1.5 or we want to pay 1% or whatever, they're going to have, I would presume they're going to have to waive the expectation of training. It just doesn't add up that you're going to pay less. I mean, think about it. We're talking, now we're talking about 1.5%, maybe 1%. That's not a lot of money for a job that still requires a lot of attention and care and knowing what you're doing and all those kind of things. Plus training fees, it just doesn't really wash. So, yes, it's tabled, and I'm glad it's not going to be in effect for the next year, and I think a lot of agents share that opinion, but it's far from gone away, and I guess we'll have to wait until around this time next year to see if it regains traction.
Yeah, you know, I think the standpoint, you know, I hear where they're coming from in regards to, hey, we're going to try to educate, you know, our players. Here's my take on that, Neil, and, you know, and let me know what you think here. How are they going to educate guys who aren't part of the NFLPA? So we're talking about guys who are in college, who then they sign a they're you know, there. They have nothing to do with the NFLPA. It's not like the NFLPA goes out to universities and starts to educate the, you know, the masses of, oh, hey, you can, you know, negotiate with your agent and things like that. And, you know, again, if even we're going to a Michigan and Alabama, USC, you know, Oregon, whatever, you're still not talking about all the seniors that are going to get an opportunity with, you know, to the NFL. So,
right.
And then especially if you're getting down to the MACs or the D2s, there's maybe two guys in that room that are, we'll get a shot there. So my thing is how are you going to educate the masses and stuff that doesn't even affect, you know, the majority of those guys, you know, in the college football. And I think that's where, you know, I'm like, okay, hey. Now, again, once they get into, you know, the NFLPA, you know, there, and they're part of that, I see where, okay, hey, you can, you know, go around the NFL clubs and say, hey, just FYI, I know you already signed an SRA, I know you're already in the league, you already whether we're drafted or whatever, but, hey, by the way, you can, you know, negotiate that. And I just think that's, you know, it's, you know, to me, it's like either keep it at 3%, it's, you know, and have, you know, obviously, like you said, there's the ability to mark 3%, 2%, you know, maybe, you know, and again, they're talking about changing the SRAs, which, you know, right now it's four copies, you know, where it's carbon paper, where you're signing and you're ripping off the white copy and giving it to the player and you're taking the yellow copy and the pink copy and the orange copies goes the NFLPA. So they are talking about making that more digital and being able to scan that, which they're 100% way behind the times. I think that's a bigger thing. Let's get that figured out, you know, before you move on there, you know, so I see that, you know, becoming, you know, less cumbersome there, but that's my whole thing is how are you going to educate when you're talking about guys that aren't in the NFL and what, you know, what other agents, guys that you've talked to this week, maybe in passing, have they said anything? Kind of what have your clients said there of inside the league?
Well, I think it's mostly been relief. I got a lot of texts and a lot of emails in the wake of the vote saying, hey, boy, we really dodged the bullet here. What do we do now to make sure that this doesn't come back? And I don't know what the answer to that is, Justin. I mean, ultimately, the players' association can do what they want to do. As you and I have discussed and as I so routinely discuss with my clients, is it is not the NFL Agent Association, but the NFL Players Association. And ultimately, the agents serve at the convenience of the players in whatever capacity the players determine that to be. And so this could come up, you know, obviously next year, it could come up. If it doesn't pass next year, it could come up again in 2 years or 3 years or whatever. Your point about educating players that are entering the league is a really valid one because, as we know, the top players in the 2017 draft really won't be from the 2017 draft per se. They'll really be slated for the 2018 draft. You know, where every year we're seeing more and more juniors enter the draft, and they typically want it to be in the top 100 picks. So how you would go about not just educating next year's seniors, but really next year's juniors, because so many of them will be part of the next year's draft class, is really beyond me. And so I don't know what the answer is there. I mean, I was at Rice's Pro Day yesterday and discussing the junior day they had with scouts. And, you know, Rice is one of the schools that allows them to come in and measure, weigh, and administer the Wonderlic to rising juniors, but they don't let them run. And obviously, rising juniors aren't allowed to, you know, run the short shuttle or run the three-cone or the vertical or the broad or what have you, all the standard parts of a pro day. So obviously that access to NFL, the NFLPA and the NFL is drastically reduced and very limited. So I don't see any way that they could reach out to players, to potential draft prospects and let them know, hey, guys, you don't have to sign for any, you know, any percentage. There's nothing written there in stone. I guess what they could do, it might be a lot easier to do, would be to make all their the standard the SRAs for 2017 retroactive and grandfather them to whatever they want to do if they wanted to go that route. Again, that would be wildly unpopular with rank and file agents, but that might be a way to do it. So and say that, hey, every SRA that's filed in December of 2016, January of 2017 has an asterisk next to it. And once we get to the combine and we can talk to these guys in a more formal way and let them know a little more about what their rights are and perhaps what they should be doing, could be doing, whatever you want to describe that, then they could move it down. But, you know, that would be pretty tricky. I mean, after all, a card laid should be a card played and a deal should be a deal. So I don't know. I mean, I'm speculating here, and that's all this is. But there's a number of ways they could possibly go at it. It's really anybody's guess which way they actually will go. But I have continuously said the NFLPA is always trying to find a way to put more money in the players' pockets, and I guess ultimately that's their job. And this is one way that they're thinking about doing that. And you know, as someone who works with agents every day and has a keen understanding of what y'all go through and what y'all are expected to do, regardless of what the standard of what the CBA says, you know, I think 3% is a tremendous bargain. And so I'm hoping that there are no further changes, but only time will tell.
For sure. And speaking of, you know, agents and contracts and different things like that, Russell Okung was a proponent of going on the no agent doing his second deal by himself. He had written a piece on the Players Tribune, which is a website that Derek Jeter had started, and it's been very popular with the, you know, as far as players writing their own piece, you know, and it's an interesting website there to check out. But he had wrote in regards to betting on himself was his article that he was going to go ahead and not have a registered contract advisor and agent for this deal. Obviously, he was coming off his rookie deal where he was the 6th overall pick in 2010 out of Oklahoma State by the Seattle Seahawks, won a Super Bowl 2 years ago with them, and goes in, you know, without an agent there. You know, now what the NFL had done was allowed an anti-tampering thing 2 days before basically the free agency had started, where agents could talk to teams, but obviously players couldn't talk to teams. So even though Russell Okung was acting as his own agent, he couldn't talk to teams there. You know, this doesn't go back to Seattle, isn't one of those first guys, even though he was one of the top offensive tackles, you know, there, and ends up signing with the Denver Broncos. And many people reported it as a 5-year, $53 million contract. But when you look at it, when you look at the details of that agreement, we're talking about basically a 1-year deal with no guaranteed money, no signing bonus. So you know, it's been reported there on Pro Football Talk and many other websites in regards to the contract and what maybe Russell Okung was thinking there. But again, there's no signing bonus. There is a $1 million workout bonus that's in that there. And, you know, the Denver Broncos could release Russell Okung, you know, and basically pay him, you know, $2 million, you know, this year for services rendered. So, it's going to be, you know, interesting, you know, when everything shakes out. And hopefully he can go ahead and play this whole contract there. We know with NFL guys, the likelihood of you getting all your money that you played there when it's especially a veteran, you know, big type deal there is relatively unlikely, but it does happen. So what did you think about that and what did, you know, your clients and people, you know, talk about when talking about the Russell Okung deal where he signed with the Denver Broncos?
Well, several points to make there, and some of them you've already made. Number one, the contract as it's released to the media when it pops on the web in the first hour, 2 hours, 24 hours, always comes out very differently from the contract as it actually exists after a day of analysis, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. You know, initially, as you mentioned, it was announced as a five-year, $53 million deal. Then it comes to find out really the only money that's absolutely going to happen within reason is the training guarantee of $1 million. And then, of course, if he's on the roster, which presumably he will be, then he makes $5 million, I believe it is, in that first year. But he has to play essentially injury-free that first year in order to make it a two-year deal and to kind of trigger a number of other elements in the contract. I think that's, you know, I mean, I think that hopefully most fans have become pretty understanding that you can't take these contracts at face value. That's number one. Number two, you made a great point about the fact that agents are allowed to, before free agency actually starts, agents are allowed to talk. And that's one to teams, and that's one good point that about this was that Okung was not allowed to do that, and that's become such an essential part of free agency now. You know, it's become, you know, real crazy swap meet / flea market that 48 hours before the player actually becomes free. And so that's why, you know, instantly when free agency starts, you're seeing players signing deals. Number three, and I think this hasn't gotten quite as much attention, players that hit free agency aren't, I guess, maybe as appealing and as enticing as perhaps they look. I mean, you know, the players that are really successful and that teams really need to have, regardless of their salary cap situation, teams find a way of bringing those players back. And so I'm sort of not trying to say anything negative about Russell Okung, but the mere fact that he made the free agency was not a ringing endorsement of Russell Okung's ability. He obviously had a shoulder issue that was a concern, and I think we saw that manifested in this deal. You know, a lot of teams perhaps took a look and considered him, but when, you know, at the end of the day, a quarterback, an offensive tackle shoulder is very important. And you know, as a guy who lived in Houston, I remember when the Texans took Tony Vazelli in the expansion draft, and were so excited about it, and it got such big headlines. And Vazelli never played a down for the Texans, essentially because he had a shoulder injury that just wouldn't heal. And that's a major concern. And I think, again, that was a little bit underplayed in the media, and that was something that a lot of people didn't pay much attention to, but NFL teams certainly were, and they'd done their homework. And so there are a lot of reasons why were an agent part of this process, then maybe the agent could have tamped that down or been more aggressive about putting out, you know, good health reports on the shoulder. And obviously could have talked to players during that 48 hours and perhaps created a market and ultimately gotten some work done that maybe would have been, you know, brought him a few more guarantees and put a little bit more money for sure in his pocket. And as you know, Justin, in the NFL, which very rarely has guaranteed contracts, it's all about that guaranteed money. It's all about the signing bonus. And so when a player of Russell Okung's stature comes out and he doesn't have that sizable signing bonus, that's a big red flag. So you asked what the reaction was from the agents that I spoke to and what have you. It was pretty joyous. I think most of them were, I mean, I wrote in our rep rumblings on Monday, you know, look, it was perhaps the best weekend that agents had in a long time, and I don't care if they busted their NCAA brackets completely wide open or not. It was, you know, very rare that you get two kind of parcels of good news like that, in that not only are they not going to drop it to 2%, but also that Okung was so highly celebrated as a guy that was going to try to go it alone and not have representation, and then his contract comes through and has a few flaws and draws a lot of criticism. I think those were two great developments for agents. You know, and I think maybe one more point to make. The contract obviously has been savaged in the media, and that's been the work, obviously, of agents who are very close to members of the media and have a very hand-in-glove relationship. And so I think no matter what kind of deal Okung signed, to some degree, it was going to get savaged. They were going to try to pick it apart. It's just that the nature of the situation, the nature of Okung's health, the nature of the way the market developed, it was maybe perhaps a little easier to do than it might have been otherwise. So great time to be an agent, great news, a lot of you know, exhaling, perhaps a lot of crow that you and I have to eat, because we both were pretty positive that it's going to go to 2%, and I think that was pretty widely shared. I think anyone, if you would have taken bets, would have, I think the action would certainly been in favor of going to 2%, but that's why the NFLPA is so exciting. We never know exactly what they're going to do, and perhaps you could argue that they don't really know what they're going to do either. So, but hey, let's
for
flip
sure.
it today, and let's be excited about that and be happy that, you know, that the thing wasn't blown wide open, and that everyone's not have to go back into the drawing board and figure out how they're going to come up with another way to pay for things. So let's be excited about that and not be party poopers.
Yeah, there you go. The thing on the Russell Okung, I just want to make one point before we move on, is that, you know, not only do the NFL Combine is about guys running, in shorts and different things like that, but it's about these backdoor deals in regards to free agencies. And I had, you know, some conversations in regards to guys that were going to be undrafted, that, you know, there's some undrafted free agency, you know, for guys that won't get drafted here in 5 weeks, that they've already, their deal's kind of already, you know, done as well. And that's what was done at the NFL Combine. So if you're a free agent and your agent's not at the NFL Combine, you know, sitting down and having beers or coffee or breakfast or, you know, all the nooks and crannies that are there in Indianapolis, you're at a disadvantage. And I think that's where,
yeah,
you know, Russell Okung, you know, that was it. He wasn't there, you know, him representing, you know, Russell Okung, the agent, wasn't there at Indianapolis, you know, just talking with guys and kind of, you know, laying just, you know, some groundworks there. So, you know, I think that's one thing that obviously is not publicized because it's really hush-hush in regards to the NFL Combine. But that's the things that are getting done. It's free agency deals. It's the undrafted, you know, free agency deals that are getting done there, you know, at bars and you know, restaurants and different things like that there, or hotel
mm-hmm.
lobbies. You know, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you're at the right Rice Pro Day. I saw your tweet. There was a number of scouts there in regards to timing, and I think that's a big thing there. And we're pretty much done, but we've got next week, and we've got a handful of more, you know, Pro Days that are going on there. And then we'll have some, you know, first week of April, we'll have guys that maybe were injured, you know, that weren't able to run, that they're going to try to run and do some kind of makeup Pro Days as they will there. But besides that, you know, kind of inside the league, you know, in regards to pro days, I know that's something that you're tracking and do there. But you know, what else is going on? What kind of you're working on? What's new and exciting inside the league there? If we got 5 minutes left to go, Neil.
One thing that I've kind of observed, and you might have as well, Justin, is the way that pro days are operating now. Is it seems like there's a significant amount of blowback for the first week of March. Anytime a school schedules a pro day for the first week of March, all I ever hear from players, from agents, is, oh my gosh, why are they doing this so early? Can't we push it back? I'm going to hold my guy out. We're going to do an individual workout. I could see on the other end of the scale, the elite players and the ones that are injured, as you mentioned, are more and more scheduling their pro days for the first week of April, sometimes even the second week of April. You know, I'm seeing some, I think, that are scheduled on April 10th and what have you, depending on health reasons and you know, a number of other factors. It looks to me like if this continues, we could see, whereas everyone's always kind of looked at March as pro day month, it looks like it may become middle of March to middle of April becomes pro day period. And I think that's probably a little unnecessary because, yeah, the elite players are essentially starting with their training the first week of January. That first Monday in January has kind of become national combine prep kickoff day, more or less. And
you
know,
maybe you should
two months that. In. maybe I should. Yeah, maybe there's a T-shirt there. It's become a situation where almost every player gets a full 2 months to train, and the perception there is that, I guess, among some people is, hey, 8 weeks may not be enough, and I've got to get this tuned up, I've got to get that tuned up, and oh my gosh, it's the first week of March, and why am I already running and testing and what have you. I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing or a necessary thing, but it seems like something that's coming because just kind of as the inevitable movement of things and especially talked to a scout yesterday at Rice and we discussed how I guess like almost everything in the NFL and ultimately I guess it's a good thing, but how the media now was encroaching into the pro day space. You know, obviously 10 years ago, the combine was something that was really still kind of hush hush and not widely publicized and kind of a thing where teams could go in and really do their thing. Now that's not the case at all. I mean, now it's a major media production and the cameras are on the floor and now you get immediate 40 times as soon as the kid runs and it's become a major, you know, very, very different from what it was really even 5 years ago. You're starting to see pro days become a stage show akin to what the NFL is. And that's something that is another kind of development of the pro day season and maybe not necessarily a good one. I think a lot of, at least from the rank and file, the scouts are on the ground, they're trying to get their work done. I think there's a perception, and we talked about this in the our Succeed Football blog, that everything's cut and dried and that kids run their 40s and everything is electronic timed and their 40 time is what their 40 time is. And at a pro day situation, and you know this very well, Justin, that couldn't be any further from the truth. I mean, what you get is, I mean, yesterday, for example, there were, I think I counted 25 scouts at Rice's pro day. There are only 5 players that worked out. I've never seen that ratio before. But they, after everyone's done taking times, they all kind of huddle and they all kind of shout out their 40 times on a player and then they put that together and then that's the number and then they kind of find a number that's in the middle. For example, you know, maybe one guy has a 4.55 and one guy has a 4.61 and one guy has a 4.49 or whatever. No one had a 4.52, but that's the number they come up with because it's somewhere in the middle, you know, just as an example. So, you know, you're not, if as schools and networks and everyone else come in and want to make this the latest frontier in content and the latest frontier in bringing the NFL to everyone's living room, that's going to have to change. Now, is that going to mean that there will be more electronic times at these pro days? If that's the case, then that's going to be a pretty significant investment of resources on the part of the colleges to provide that, unless the NFL is somehow going to do it. And how do they do that? I don't know. So, you know, it's just the line between entertainment and just the game itself is vanishing before our eyes. And again, maybe that's a good thing. I think certainly the people on Park Avenue at New York headquarters would say that's a great thing because ultimately that means more money coming into their pockets, and the NFL has become almost the ultimate interactive experience because everybody gets to put their own mock drafts together and watch and track everyone's 40 times and hear the buzz about who failed their drug test at the combine and all those kind of things. And that's one reason why the league has enjoyed such a expansion of interest. But at the same time, if you're going to be a scout, you've got to gather
we
that gotta information.
Go.
You've got to be able to do it.
Well, Neil,
sorry,
I appreciate it. Well, we're 2 seconds to go. We'll talk to you later.
All right, man. Bye-bye.